Some people say that rappers don't have feelings. We have feelings.
We have feelings.
Some people say that we are not rappers.
We're rappers.
That hurts our feelings.
Hurts our feelings when you say we're not rappers.
Some people say that rappers are invincible.
We're invincible.
We're invincible. But you are about to hear our true stories.
Real experiences.
Autobiographical raps.
Things that happened to us.
All true. Bring the rhyme.
I make a meal for my friends. Try to make it delicious. Try to keep it nutritious. Create wonderful dishes. Not one of them thinks about the way I feel. Nobody compliments the meal.
I got hurt feelings. I got hurt feelings.
I feel like a prize asshole. No one even mentions my casserole.
I got hurt feelings. I got hurt feelings.
Said something nice about my professor role.
Here's a little story to bring a tear to your eye. I was shopping for a wetsuit to scuba dive, but every suit I tried was too big around the thighs, and the assistant suggests I try a lady size.
I got hurt feelings. I got hurt feelings.
I'm not gonna wear a lady's wetsuit. I'm a man.
I got hurt feelings. I got hurt feelings.
Give me a small man's wetsuit, please.
It's my birthday, 2003, waiting for a call from my family. They forgot about me.
I got hurt feelings, I got hurt feelings.
The day after my birthday is not my birthday, Mom.
I call my friends, say let's go into town, but they're all too busy to go into town. So I go by myself, I go into town, then I see all my friends, they're all in town.
I got hurt feelings, I got hurt feelings.
They're all lined up to watch that movie, Made in Manhattan.
Have you ever been told your ass is too big? Have you ever been asked if your hair is a wig? Have you ever been told you're mediocre in bed? Have you ever been told you got a weird shaped head? Has your family ever forgotten you and driven away? Once again, they forgot about Jay. Were you ever called homo cause at school you took drama? Have you ever been told that you look like a llama?
Tears of a rapper.
Don't wanna make a rapper cry, then watch what
I'm
you say.
I'm crying tears of a rapper.
Pouring out the bullets of my eye
can. Co-created tears of a rapper.
These are the tears of a rapper now.
These are diamond tears of a rapper.
These are the bulletproof 24 karat gold tears of a rapper.
Abraham Lubelski. So, do you feel like doing a little interview for Why the Fuck Not podcast?
Why the fuck not? I thought you'd never ask.
I did, eventually. I was going to do it online, but you can't use Skype, can you?
Yes, I can. If you say hello, I'll respond.
If you call me at the right time, yeah. Instead of...
Call me, I won't call you.
Very good. So tell me, when did you decide to become an artist? Did you decide to become an artist, or you were always an artist?
It never occurred to me. I just kind of wanted to have fun and just do whatever I felt like it. And when I realized that as an artist, that gave me permission, I said, okay, call me an artist.
Yeah. And so how old were you when you decided?
Probably when I saw them. I was about 7 years old, and I saw this cute blondish girl, and we took a walk into the fields, and we had a lot of fun.
Fantastic. And you thought, I am an artist.
So it's very creative.
How old were you when you moved to New York?
I came to New York when I was 10 years old.
Fantastic. And what did you think of it? Do you remember any of it? I mean,
it was like a circus. I mean, kids were playing stickball in the streets, waving big broom handles and with little rubber balls and hitting it across and breaking windows. And kids were tumbling over each other and having fights.
And then
pushing scooters around each other, handmade scooters. And there were little gangs and trouble. And people were going around with Hopalong Cassidy holsters and playing cowboys and Indians. It was a carnival.
And then the 1929 crisis happened.
2029, you mean?
Yes, I'm talking 2008, wasn't it? So yeah, that sounds good. Did you study art?
No.
What did you study? Did you study anything?
I studied English literature and psychology.
Oh, right. Now I understand.
And philosophy.
Who's your favorite philosopher?
Mayor.
Mayor.
Der Kaffee ist kalt, Zigaretten sind alle. Wie schön wär jetzt bloß ein Bier. Bier würde helfen, denn Russland ist kalt. 5 Jahre bin ich jetzt schon.
You got me there. I have no idea who the fuck Mayor is.
No, I'm interested in contemporary physics actually a lot. I think that's pretty as close you can get as to dealing with the real world and still looking for ideas about what's happening in this universe of ours and what we're thinking.
Right. And did you?
And I like people like Michio Kaku, who's a wonderful open teacher of physics. Here at the New York universities, state universities, New York
right.
City College, rather.
So have you come to any conclusion, philosophically?
It's a very lonely world.
It's a very lonely world.
Even though we're swimming in a pool of infinite possibilities.
Fantastic. So tell me about New York Arts. Why did you decide to have a magazine, and what was going on in your life because before you decided to start up a magazine? And tell me the story.
I think as an artist, as a human being, I don't know, I'm just lucky that I was born with this restlessness and curiosity and wanting to keep doing as much as I can. It was nothing is ever enough. And I was making art, painting, performance art, conceptual art, installation art, doing things that were impossible. I basically started to do an exhibition. One of my first successful public presentation was exhibiting $250,000 as a piece of sculpture, actual money.
Wow.
And so...
Where did you get that?
I just kind of kept running around and begging and stealing and borrowing. And it cost me about... In those days, and that was 1969, it cost me $60 a day to pay the interest on that kind of money.
Oh, wow.
So I forked it up.
Yeah. So that's not even too bad. It's probably more now.
But in any case, I liked it because it seemed... I've always been intrigued by trying to do the impossible. And I guess like any rebellious spirit that we are born as we are born as rebellious spirits. We want to do whatever somebody says you can't do.
Exactly.
So I figured this was a kind of little crazy idea, and nobody, certainly I couldn't imagine how I could do it, but I decided I was going to do it, and it worked.
Fantastic. And how what did the public say? I mean, how was it?
Well, I got a 2 or 3 page spread in Life magazine.
Fantastic.
And
you got someone to come here and interview you and take photos of you and all that?
Well, they came to the show and they did the interview, and Life magazine said they wanted to do an article, and I said, well, sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good. And then from then you decided to open up a magazine yourself.
I did a couple of years of running around the world, traveling, and then continuing to work with people that I admired, in groups such as Streetworks with John Perrault, who was a well-known critic at the time here mm-hmm. in Village Voice. And I worked with a bunch of those artists, including Vito Acconci and the whole group there from Streetworks. And I was really admiring the freedom that artists explored, to not to be defined by anyone or anything or any form of work. And so that was the challenge.
Don't you think that the word freedom is not used enough in the art world right now? Because
well, it's never used anywhere in the world. You know? Nobody understands what freedom really is, people are afraid of it, like most of us are. You know, freedom means you take a chance.
Exactly.
You want to jump off a ledge and see what happens. Most of the time, you don't get to try again. And in artwork, if you express yourself too freely, you get arrested. If you're lucky, you just get arrested. Otherwise, you drop dead. You know.
Right. Absolutely. But don't you think artists nowadays have less freedom than they used to do, or is it the same?
I think it's pretty much the same. You know, I think as you get older, after the age of 2, you have less and less freedom.
Of course.
And you have to find a way to listen to a voice inside of you if you can, which becomes more difficult. But that's the only way you can survive, if you keep listening to that voice, and you can do that at the age of 100 as well.
So yeah, Konstantin Brancusi was saying that when you're no longer a child, you're already dead. And I think that's pretty close
absolutely.
To your philosophy.
It's probably from the moment you're born, you begin to die.
You're right. So tell me about New York Arts. What made you decide to have this very democratic magazine that covers everybody and anybody? And
well, it's precisely that. I didn't want to continue in a conformist or repressive way, or judgmental way for that matter. I didn't want to approach people for favors and opportunities. And I said, what the fuck? You know, I can make my own voice, and I can find my own way of making it heard the way I want to, and not wait for other people's permission. So within 3 to 4 weeks of deciding that, I published the first magazine, first issue.
And then it became monthly?
And it continued, you know, to be monthly. And of course, as far as I was concerned, the most effective way to get those democratic voices out in 1995 was to put everything immediately on the internet. And that was I was one of the first to make that the art community as public and as open an opportunity as possible. And even now, I mean, the internet is not as free as people think it is, but I think you do need very exciting people out there to show how to get all the voices heard, not to be judgmental, not to say what's highbrow or lowbrow or what's good art or bad art. I don't think we're in any position to judge ourselves if we want to maintain freedom, because that's the first thing that you will be told. It's bad, it's no good, don't, it's
don't
no good,
this,
no
don't
good,
do
don't,
that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, it's no good, it's no good, it's no good.
It's bad and for your career, you know?
Exactly. So you don't judge others, and you don't try to judge yourself as an artist, or as a human being, for that matter.
Right. But you do get judged quite a lot in the art world, no?
Well, you get judged mostly by yourself. Forget about the art world. You're your worst critic and your worst enemy.
So tell me more about New York Arts. What's do you think now? It now that the internet is working so well, let's say smoothly, in comparison to a few years ago. Do you think there's still a need for a paper magazine instead of just getting everything online and all that? And also, do you still think there's the need for a filter like New York Arts could be in order to show stuff that is otherwise invisible? I mean, are there still unknown artists? Are there still invisible people? Are there still exciting things to cover in a magazine?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I always like to make the comparison of, you know, any media in the beginning, like let's say the telephone. You know, how can you find out who's available to be talked to? You'd have to look in a telephone book. Like the New York telephone book had maybe 2 million names in it, but you don't know who's in the phone book unless you happen to get a memo or a note from somebody, look up my name and you can find my telephone book.
Right.
The internet is no more available to people who want to get exposure or attention any more than the telephone was then. There's, you know, yes, it's more democratic, it's more, but before I can look up, you know, Stefano Pasquini, I have to know something about how to spell your name or who you are,
or how to pronounce
before
it.
Look it up at stefanopasquini.com if that's what you have it listed.
No, it's a guy, it's a photographer, but that's not me.
Yeah, right. So again, it's the wrong, I call the wrong
exactly,
number. You know?
Exactly, and, which is great.
All my effort is gone, so I have to wait for you to let me know again.
Yeah.
But the point here is that you have maybe, 50 million websites?
In the world?
In the world.
Okay.
Or 50 million individuals that have access and have lives to share, and what, who knows how many of those are artists or celebrities or individuals that you may want to contact. You cannot reach them because you don't know how to reach them. You don't know who they are and what's their attention. So even if they're on the internet, you need some way to get attention for yourself. Anyway, I'm not sure how this relates to the art world per se.
Right.
I think the internet does is as complicated a way to get people to identify you and get to know you as any other media source was.
Mm-hmm. So
In South America in the 50s and 60s, the dictators there, one of the first things they did was to give everyone a TV.
Right.
And they wanted to, people wondered why that was the case. But the dictators felt that they had their own public channels. And then if everyone had a TV, they knew what information they were getting.
Exactly.
So that no underground source was going to give them information. They would keep their attention focused on the TV.
Absolutely.
And they would give the propaganda the line. And
well,
the internet works the same way. The people who have the most access to the internet are those who spend all the money to promote, to advertise, whether it's a Google indirectly. These are the names that stand out. And the companies that are involved there spend tons of money, millions of dollars, to get the most attention, and the rest of us are lost.
So did you register abrahamlubelsky.com?
I did, but I did more than that. I did a couple of different websites with different projects that are intermingled, as many as I can. I put out newsletters through those websites, and I send them out through the internet, sometimes 5,000 a night, but it's a newsletter service. And it's all for free, just to be able to get more volume, more attention through other sources. I also continue to print, not because I necessarily like it, but because it takes longer and it's a more expensive process, but it's another way for people to kind of have a positive feeling about what's going on. They're still very much used to it. It's grandma and grandpa and very nostalgic feeling. You know, so I'm still there, but that's not really such a strong force nowadays.
When I wake up to see your smiling face, ha ha, ha ha, ha ha, for heaven's sake, you are my saving grace, ha ha, ha ha, ha ha. I wouldn't doubt it if you were sent from heaven. Tutor teaching me the meaning of love. it is an image of you. Ha, 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 ha. I make a dinner, you are the taste of my food. Ha, 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 ha. When I leave you, be sure you're all on my mind. Couldn't forget you, you are the sun in my shine. Pulls me away from you. There's nothing I can do. No one I can see. No one who has the key. When you're happy, it makes me insane. When you're dancing, it makes me do the same. When I return from being so far away, all my worries and sorrows, they just fade away. When the world pulls me away, nothing I can do. No one I can see. No one who has a key to get out. Please don't let my wandering ways make you believe that I don't care about you. You can tell by the smile on my face. As a matter of fact, I cannot live without you. When the world pulls me away from you, there's nothing I can do. No one I can see. No one who has a key to get out.
So I'm looking at this Art Fairs International newspaper, which is a newspaper format, and that's quite new, right?
Yes, yes, only in the last 2 years.
So what made you switch? Well, actually, it's not a switch, because New York Arts Magazine still exists. What made you want to do this too? I mean, what was the drive that
you
thought,
continued,
we have to do a newspaper?
Continued restlessness, if I could, get on a megaphone and do nightly shows on the internet, I would do that. You know, look, there's so much amazing talent out there.
Right.
This is not just about artists. These are about wonderful writers, wonderful creative spirits and human beings. I mean, you can multiply the art world by a hundredfold, and you still haven't tapped those very energetic, creative, beautiful ideas that people are out there. And I could publish a newspaper like that every day.
Right.
If I had the strength and the people that would, you know, if I just had the energy to do it.
Right.
There's enough material to do that every day.
I was talking to a curator, and he seemed to think that museums will die in the future because exactly because of what you say. Because everybody will have their own, like, 15 minutes of creativity, and they can do that on Facebook, MySpace, and all that stuff, or in New York Arts Magazine.
Well, what the fuck are you talking about? Listen.
Yes,
I had 10, 20, 30 years ago, I was proposing, and I would still propose, that you blow up every fucking museum in the world. Museums are just old artifacts. They're old farty ideas about what's left around. Most of the stuff lies in the basements and is dead material, and nobody gets this chance to show. The museums are about, not about contemporary new energy and ideas. You know, you know, in Mexico and Oaxaca area, at the you travel there on the roads, on the highways, you see in the distance hundreds of mounds, little mounds, piles all covered with grass. And what they did every few years, the Mixtec culture there, every 50 years, they would break all their ceramics, which is their culture and their art. They would break it to bits and make a pile of mound and break it and start all over again every 50 years. You don't need museums. They're dead artifacts of things from the past.
So you don't think we can learn from the past? I mean,
we only learn for the most part. Unfortunately, we don't learn from the past, whether you're learning or not. You know,
the political situation.
I mean, I think what we don't do enough time is look at what's in front of our noses.
Right.
I mean, we may have learned from the past, but the very same criminals and crooks are staring you right in the face, and we allow them to pull the wool over our eyes and continue to espouse corrupt philosophies and ideas, and not, you know, we know what it takes. I mean, why are we still fighting and arguing if we know how dangerous nuclear weapons are and how corrupt, you know, certain, you know, I mean, you just have to stop and get rid of this stuff. But nobody knows how to do it because they're worried about all the same old philosophy. I'm sorry, I'm not gonna clarify my philosophical political position in 2 minutes, but it's very corrupt.
Oh, I can clarify.
Yeah,
you're
please,
a bloody communist,
you.
And you should get arrested immediately. Thankfully, it's not. We're not during the Cold War anymore. Otherwise, just saying this would get you in jail. So let's go back to art. You did like a project where you did a lot of drawings. What was the project? 1,000,000 drawings, 5,000 drawings?
Actually, it's again 250,000 drawings that finally resulted from that project.
Okay.
The first idea was to actually do 5,000 drawings, and then within 2 weeks' time, it escalated to 50,000 drawings. The idea was again the multiplicity, the diversity, the infinite opportunities, and art is about all these wonderful ideas and impressions and feelings and sensations, whether it's color or impulses or anything that we may imagine is possible. So I just wanted to do quick, impulsive works without being judgmental. I mean, often we could sit at a painting for weeks on end and say, oh, we need to do this and fix that, and, you know, and you forget all the impulse that initially got you started. So I wanted to do, if possible, a drawing or a paint or a little work within 2 minutes or 10 minutes or 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to figure out how to do that, and it was obviously very spontaneous and very immediate, and whatever else you might say, it was there. And I began to produce little works on paper, or 8x10 works on paper. Some were in a matter of 2 seconds. I said, great, good, good. And in every one I said, good. I wasn't judging it. Or I was saying, yes.
Okay.
You know, and some took maybe as long as five minutes, but that's a long time.
Time, yes, absolutely. So what did you do with them afterwards?
Well, it was again, when I presented it and exhibited it, I wanted to create another issue about it. Individuals were allowed to sort through the 50,000 original works, and if they saw one that they enjoyed or they liked, they were able to take it for free, and then they could just sign a name that they were collecting and getting to keep one for free.
Right.
If they wanted to get a second one, they had to buy it.
Very good.
But at least it gave everyone a chance to make their own determination of what they liked and to be able to be a collector.
Yeah, that's very nice. And again, it's very democratic, not to say communistic, really.
Well, one friend of mine, an artist who I know very well, he saw those 50,000 and he was looking for them. And on the way out, he was very sad. He looked at me very sadly and said, Abraham, there are at least 5 or 4 masterpieces that I saw there. They were wonderful things. You shouldn't give those things away.
Right.
So I said to him, okay, you know what? If you show me the 4 or 5 masterpieces, I'll put them aside. I won't give them away.
Okay.
And he stormed out of the place, you know, furious.
Excellent, excellent. So if the director of MoMA said to you, okay, after Marina, we'll have you in our retrospective, what are you going to say?
I say, why the fuck not?
I thought you were going to say, fuck off. Thank you.
I see your face when I close my eyes. I think about you all the time. Everything I see reminds me you were here. Everything I feel says you still are. No one could make them smile like you did. No one could make us laugh like you did. You have the biggest heart I've ever known. Take it from us much too young. Haunts me when I'm sleeping. There's no one I'd rather be haunted by. I think about the places I won't get to see you. But I know you live on in our smiles. No one could make us laugh like you did. No one could make them smile like you did. The biggest heart I've ever known. Take it from us much too young. I'm